You're listening to Loving BDSM Podcast, episode 52. Hey everybody, Kayla Lords here. Today, I'm talking about why you don't have to be perfect to be worthy of a good, healthy DS relationship. Welcome to the Loving BDSM Podcast. If this is your first time listening, glad to have you. If you're back for another week, welcome back. Loving BDSM is produced every Friday for your kinky pleasure and education, and show notes are found at kaylalords.com. Come back often and feel free to add the podcast to your favorite RSS feed or iTunes. If you love what you hear, we'd love a good review on iTunes to help other kinksters find us. You can follow me on Twitter at kaylalords or stalk John Brownstone at southernsirsplace.com. All links are in the show notes. So this show that you're listening to right now went live on Friday, September 2nd, when the 1 year anniversary of the Loving BDSM Podcast giveaway actually ends. But I'm recording before Friday because that's what I do. And so no, I have no clue who the winner is yet. So anybody who thought, oh, I'll tune into the show and find out who the winner is. No, you will not. Not until next week. So the winner will be decided. Y'all, just a little background here. This show goes live at just after midnight Eastern time, my time zone. Okay. Even I sleep. So if you listen to the show the moment it goes live, I'm asleep right now. The giveaway ended at midnight this morning, like just before the show went live. So when I wake up and I get some caffeine in me and I like, you know, stop growling at people or whatever, I will figure out the winner. And when I say I'll figure out the winner, I mean I will click the button on Rafflecopter and Rafflecopter's random winner generator doolally. That's a technical term. Anyway, it will select the winner. And if the person is okay with it, and if they have a screen name they use that, you know, lets them stay anonymous, I will announce them on the next show. Okay, so not this show. I know some of you are going, did I win? I don't know yet, y'all. Next show, we will know that we have a winner, and hopefully they will be on the ball when I email them, and they'll say, yes, I see this email, and yes, thank you, I will be a winner, and yes, here's my mailing address. So it's coming. I have not forgotten. It's just timing, y'all, just the timing. Okay. So now that we've got that out of the way, I'm going to do a quick commercial. And it's not really a quick commercial. I've thought about how I want to explain this, and it's going to take me a couple minutes. And it involves me doing the thing that I hate more than almost anything, and that is asking people who don't know me very well, other than what I tell you here on the show and in my writing, for help. I hate asking for help. John Brownstone could tell you if he was here to tell you, but his schedule was a little weird this week, so it's just me begging for help for the first few minutes of the show. Ugh, I hate that. Okay, so I'm going to get into it and rip it off like a Band-Aid. So here's the deal. My big ass hairy goal, BHAG / dream, okay? It's always a dream until you actually start working towards it, then it's a goal. So right now we're in between goal and dream, is to make my professional living, my sole living, as Kayla Lords, the BDSM, DS, and sex writer, blogger, and podcaster. I do it right now for either not any money at all, depending on what it is, or very little. And I did the math, what I earn as a writer in this venue as a kinkster is about 25% of my monthly income, which isn't awful, but I can't quit my vanilla writing jobs. I have to keep doing those for now. So that's the big ass hairy dream / goal. Well, I have put in place some plans to move that goal along, to make that dream a reality. And I've got some things that once I can get through this mental gunk, which we'll be talking about later in the show, and can deal with some of my anxieties, that I will be hopefully putting out there to help make that dream a reality. And hopefully people find what I have to say worthy enough and interesting enough and educational enough that they would pay for some of that. So that's later. That's way, way, way later. But in the process, everything I've read and everything I've seen from a professional aspect is that when you want to be a professional about something, you have to educate yourself, you have to network, you have to make connections, you have to meet people. And most of us, especially freelancers, especially writers, we do this through networking events and conferences. Well, as you can imagine, in the sex writing world, there's not a whole hell of a lot. The two biggest ones are Eroticon, which is in England every year, and the BDSM Writers Convention in New York, which it just happened a couple weeks ago in August. I didn't even think about it this year because every other year it has conflicted with the start of the school year. And so I'm not comfortable leaving my kids to start school without me here. And John Brownstone's work schedule will not let him be late, take time off, anything when school starts. So it's been out of the picture for, I don't even consider it. And I'm not sure about next year. And I'm not even worried about that when that's August. I'm thinking of Eroticon right now in London in March 2017. So it was a strong enough urge that I actually sat down and I did my homework and I figured up a rough estimate because I don't know about the hotel yet and the airline you never really know until you actually sit down to book. But it looks like the total cost to me will be about $2,000 to go to Eroticon for 3 or 4 days in London across the Atlantic Ocean. Oh my gosh, my very first trip out of the country. Yes, I'm admitting that I'm 36 and I've never left my country, my own home country, but there it is. For the record, the furthest north I've ever been is Baltimore, Maryland. I have been to California, but I've never been, it's always been South California. If that tells you anything about me, clearly I'm Southern, even in my travels. So there's a lot. There's passports and there's registration. Those are the two least expensive items, and I can do those on my own. There's the potential cost of the hotel, the airline ticket, and other than the free meals provided by the convention, I do have to eat. That's not exactly the weight loss program I was hoping for, y'all. Starvation's not my thing. Anyway, so I'm freaking out. $2,000 is actually not that much to pick up and go across an ocean to another entire continent. It's probably pretty minimal. But our household budget's tight. I can't pull $400 or $500 a month out of the household budget to make this trip happen. So I have to do it through my work as Kayla Lourdes. And that's where I need your help. So I'm really, really, really not good for just asking for money and not working for it or giving something in return. Like, it just bothers the hell out of me. So I'm coming to you guys through the show. And every so often, I'll mention it again. I won't do it to you every week. That's not cool. I'm not spamming you as a listener. I hate that. But I will mention it every so often. And if you are a subscriber to my newsletter, you will see this in the today's newsletter, Friday, September 2nd. I'll send out a newsletter, and that'll be at the bottom too. So you'll get this a couple of times, and if it starts to get old, just like, forgive me. I'm really trying to make this happen. So the ways you guys can help me, so I can maybe wrap this up and get onto the actual show. I am a writer. I'm an erotic writer. I have a few books out. I don't write or publish nearly as often as I want to, but I do have some books out, and I have them all listed through my website, and you can buy from Amazon or Smashwords or Barnes & Noble. If you don't have an e-reader, you can actually do a direct download from my website in a PDF format. There's all kinds of options. So if you haven't purchased any of my books and you like your erotica with some kink and some DS aspects to it, because that's what I do, BDSM and DS erotica is what I write. I've got several books for you to choose from. And the ebooks range in price from $1.99 to $2.99. I mean, they're not expensive, y'all. For those of you who have purchased my books and read them and liked them, if you didn't like them, that's cool. Totally get it. But if you read them and you liked them, please leave a review wherever you buy them from. So whether it's Amazon or Smashwords or Barnes & Noble or iBooks or wherever you get them, if you leave a review, you actually help me out. Because the more reviews a book gets, the more times it gets seen by people who are searching for those kinds of books. And don't be surprised, kinky erotica is hot, 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 and everybody wants to read it. And so if I can get reviews for my books, honest reviews, tell what you honestly thought of it, then it will help me sell more books. So that's one way. The other, some of you are probably familiar with, if you hear the sound of my voice and you hear how beautiful it sounds, not because of me, but because of the microphone, that was from y'all helping me through Patreon, right? My kinky patrons, and I love my kinky patrons. Well, I have changed how I do Patreon. It used to be that you pledged whatever amount you pledged per month, and for your total pledge, you got a goodie, right? And then I got the funds and I did whatever I need to do with it. I bought the microphone. I've published a book with it. The giveaway, thank you to my kinky patrons, because without you guys, this giveaway would not have happened. Well, I've changed that up a little bit. I felt guilty about it. I didn't feel like I was earning my money. You know, y'all were just handing me money and I wasn't doing anything for it. So it's now tied to the writing I upload. So anything that's going to be a book, as in, for those of you who care, the final Sir and Baby Girl book. Yeah, I'm writing it and uploading it chapter by chapter into Patreon. So if you are a kinky patron, for as little as a dollar, you can read my writing before it ever gets published. It's unedited in the sense that it could change by the time I get to the final product, but it's readable. It's not, there's no bad grammar or, you know, crazy spelling. It's a full chapter that you can read. And I have uploaded one already, and I turned myself on writing it at Starbucks, so that was awkward. And the way it works is I will upload one or two stories slash chapters a month. So if you pledge a dollar and I upload one story for the month, your card or whatever is charged a dollar. If I upload two, and I will never upload more than two, you're charged $2. But if I slack off and don't upload anything, you don't have to pay anything. So there's levels to it. If you pledge three or more dollars, you get the ebook of whatever I end up publishing that I've shared with you on Patreon. If you do, I think, $5 a month, you get access to the videos I make each month. Like there's perks, y'all. So if you're interested, Patreon is the place to go for that, and you can do that, okay? And you get access to the writing before it's published. You get to see it before anybody else does. And you get to give me feedback. So if something really didn't work and you're like, oh, that wasn't a turn on, that was gross, you can tell me and I'll take that into consideration. So then there's the third way, because it happened last time when we talked about the microphone. Somebody was like, I just want to like give you a few dollars. Do you have PayPal? Why? Yes, I do. So in the show notes, I have a PayPal link where if you're just like, look, here's $5 to the Get Your Ass to London fund here, I'm done. Cool. You can do that too. Okay. And y'all, if you don't have the money or you're just like, ooh, that's not my thing, I don't like to do that, I'm cool with that too. I totally understand. Share this podcast, share my writing, share my Patreon link, whether it's on FetLife or it's on Twitter or wherever you are in your kinky world in the online space. If you share my writing with other people and they decide they like it and they decide it's worth the few dollars to buy a book or to become a patron or whatever, that helps me too. Okay. Just so we're clear, I don't want anybody to think I've got my hand out of, oh, give me $2,000 and I want to go to London and have, you know, big time in London, which I do want to have a big time in London. That's beside the point. I am trying to work for it myself. So, you know, I have these oddball jobs that come up infrequently and we can't plan for them and they're not part of the household budget. I've already talked to John Brownstone. I said, okay, this has been averaging about $100 to $200 a month. Can I, if that happens, if I keep getting these kinds of jobs, can I put that money aside? Do I have to put it in the household budget or the savings account, or can I put it in the Eroticon fund? And he said, put it in the Eroticon fund. So if I'm going to do my part to pump out good writing and to keep working hard and to be worthy of your dollars, and hopefully if you can, you will help send me to London. Oh my gosh, London, in March, 2017. So that's my commercial, and I'm sweat, y'all. I'm so glad this is not video. I'm so glad this is audio recording. I'm sweating. I really don't like talking about this, but I know that I can't do it alone. I know I need help. I really think it'll help me be better at what I do, which ultimately does benefit you, by the way. If I'm a better writer, you get to read better writing. If I'm a better podcaster, if I get some good ideas from people who talk about other, you know, types of sex, and I can bring them sort of home to you guys, then you do get the benefit of that. So that's my commercial. That's my speech. Blah, I don't want to talk about it again. Certainly not for the rest of the show. You might see me talk about it online, definitely on the blog. I'll put something up on it. And yeah, like I said, in my newsletter, and you know, every few weeks I might mention it to you guys again, but that was a 10-minute commercial. I'm done. I don't want to talk about it anymore. So let's get into the actual show. And if you're still with me after all of that, bless you. I love you forever and ever. Amen. For those of you who appreciate this, let me just say y'all and fuck, because I know some of y'all really like that. I feel like that's your reward for sitting through all that. So I'm kind of all over the place with today's show because I've got a lot on my mind and it's based on what I'm going through. And I haven't completely formulated how I think or feel about everything yet, but something keeps sort of hitting me. And I got an email from a submissive just the other day that really drove it home. So the submissive sent me this email and she said, look, I'm not very experienced. I'm just starting to consider a DS relationship with this man I've met. I really like him. I think he's a good guy. However, I have major, major trust issues, and I'm afraid that my trust issues will prevent me from ever allowing myself to really submit and give myself to this person and to even figure out if he's worthy of it, and what the hell do I do? And I thought to myself, oh, honey, understand. 2 and 3.5 years ago, I was right there. The situation was different. I was coming fresh off of my very first DS heartbreak. Should damn well be my last DS heartbreak. I'll tell you that right now. John Brownstone is stuck with me. We're going out together. I think I said that last show, and I mean that. When he is 118 and I am 100, we will hold hands and we will go out together. Blaze of glory. Anyway, I feel a little passionately about that. I will not live one day without that man. Anyway, so I when I went through my own, oh God, I have trust issues, and here's this dominant who is appealing to me, but I'm not sure, I kind of wondered the same thing. And there are those of us out there who have trust issues. And it brought me back to the original thought for today's show that I had, which was this idea that we kind of buy into, because the internet tells us and because relationship people tell us, that you can't find true love until you love yourself. You can't be a good partner until you think you're great. You know, you have to have good self-esteem in order to, you know, properly be a good partner in a relationship. And I'm going to call bullshit on some of that. I wrote ages and ages and ages ago a blog post on the blog. I will link to it in the show notes about how, yes, even submissives with low self-esteem can be good submissives. We can be really good in a DS relationship. And quite frankly, if we're fortunate enough to have the right partner, we can be damn good in a DS relationship because we're trying so hard to please. Now, that's not to say that when you have low self-esteem or you're afraid of being alone or you have trust issues that you don't sabotage yourself. You absolutely do. You know, I do agree that it is, you have to learn how to be alone in order to not be with somebody out of a fear of being alone. You kind of have to get comfortable with that. But that doesn't mean that a good relationship is completely out of your grasp just because you don't have all of your shit together first, okay? I look at it in the inverse. If I had had some of these mental health issues that I'm going through right now before I met John Brownstone, would I have told myself that I wasn't worthy of his care and affection? There's a good chance I would have. I know people who do that now. However, I'm in the middle of this relationship. I know he loves me. I know I love him. And I don't in any way think that I'm not worthy of his love because I have these mental health issues. Do I feel guilty when they affect us? Of course I do. But that doesn't mean I think that he should dump me because I now have a mental health thing going on. So if we don't think that way when we're in the relationship, and if you do, please stop. You are worthy of love. You absolutely are. That person probably loves you more now that you're vulnerable in this way. Hopefully they do. So if you're not in a relationship yet and you have maybe a mental health issue or you have some strong anxieties or you have trust issues, you are no less worthy than I am just because I'm already in the relationship. So I kind of want to talk about that today, and I want to sort of talk about how I want to be real with you about how, yes, our issues can screw us up. You know, if you are afraid of being alone, you can most likely pick some really shitty partners just so you don't have to be alone. And yes, that is a problem. However, if you are afraid of being alone and you have trust issues, that was mine. I was kind of convinced I was always going to be alone, and I was trying to sort of get myself in that mindset of, you're just going to be alone. Nobody ever stays. You always get dumped, or they walk away, or they abandon you emotionally, even when they're there physically. You know, whatever the things were that were going through my head, and there were a lot of them, I was trying to convince myself that I should just be alone. And then I had my trust issues, or I don't trust anybody, I don't know. And it was compounded with being dumped as a submissive. And here's this dominant knocking on my door, my online door, we were in long distance at first, saying, hi, I'm here, I think you're great, I want to get to know you, I want to get closer to you. And it was awful. And I, you know, it's amazing to me. I have anxieties now to the point that the therapist was like, well, yeah, you're a little anxious. And yet, and I can't function. And we'll talk about that a little bit more in a few minutes. But, you know, 3.5 years ago, I was anxious and I was freaking out and I was terrified. And yet I was willing to take teeny tiny little baby steps. So whether you are dominant or submissive, whether you are the one pursuing the relationship with the person with issues, or you are the one who desperately wants the relationship and you have issues and you're terrified, there's a lot of things to think about. And I don't really think I can cover it all in one show. I'm not even going to really try. You know, in some ways, we've talked about some of this stuff. We've talked about the responsibilities of a submissive. We've talked about tasks, right? We've talked about the things you do to make your relationship work and be healthy. But what about who you are and how you handle the world around you? Now, that's going to be different for every single one of us. You know, not just the fact that we all have our different issues to contend with, whether it is we think we're fat and we don't deserve love. By the way, you do. Fat is not what you are. It is a thing. You have, what's the quote I heard? You have fingernails. You are not fingernails. So guess what? You have fat. You are not fat. Okay. It's just an aspect of who you are. And yes, you're completely lovable no matter what your size is. But there are people who believe that. Men and women. Dominants and submissives. It's a human thing, a people thing, not a kink thing, y'all. Then there's the people with trust issues who have been hurt so often. Or like me, who has been told she has what is known as an avoidant personality. It's not a disorder as far as we know, but it is who I am. I keep everybody at arm's length. You know, even the people I most desperately want to allow into my inner circle, there's a certain distance, which is why the bond I have with John Brownstone is so strong, because he got in all the way. He broke down all the barriers. He worked really hard for it. And he was the type, and all of y'all out there with trust issues, you know what I'm talking about. You start, you know, talking to somebody, you considering a relationship, you're thinking maybe they're good, I don't know, and you get freaked out, right? They remind you of somebody, or you just start doubting, or maybe they screw up because people make mistakes and they say the wrong thing, or they trigger an old memory or whatever they do, and you run, right? You go, I'm not doing this anymore. You shut them out. You don't answer their calls. You don't answer their texts. You're like, I'm done, right? We all do it. And there are a lot of people who let us go. Guess what? When that person lets you go, let them. Be grateful, okay? They didn't want to work hard to get you. That's okay. That means they were not the right one for you. The difference with John Brownstone is every time I tried to run, he said, you are not running. Do not run away from me. Mentally, physically, emotionally, don't run. We will figure this out together. I am not scared of your trust issues. I am not like the rest. And so he said it, which we all know if you have trust issues, that talk is cheap, right? For those of you who don't have trust issues, I wish I could be like you. but he proved it, and he proved it with his actions, and he continues to prove it now. I mean, he's got me, okay? The ring, the engagement ring at least, is on the finger. Oh, I have to say, I'm totally interrupting myself, but I have to tell you, we finally picked a freaking wedding date. October 28th, 2017. So next year, I probably will do some wedding themed, kinky wedding themed, shows leading up to it. And yes, I'll probably still convince him that we need to do a show before the wedding. But anyway, yes, so I did that. Yay. But that's my point. Okay. 3.5 years later, I'm engaged to him. I've got a ring on my finger and he still works hard to prove himself all the time because he knows how deep my trust issues run. Low self-esteem. Okay. Now low self-esteem, I have been here. What tends to happen is we pick a partner who treats us like shit because we think we deserve to be treated like shit. So you're your own worst enemy at that point. So you know what you do? You hold out for the person who tells you good things about yourself, who appreciates everything about you. Now, I promise, hand to God here, I swear to God, you are not going to believe that person, maybe forever. You may never completely believe them. What I had to do with John Brownstone was reframe it in a DS way. He is my dominant. He is daddy. If he says it's true, it's true. I don't even have to believe him. I just have to accept that that's what he said. And I am not allowed to talk bad about somebody he loves. So I am not allowed to talk bad about myself. I will tell you, after all these years together, the more I am surrounded by that kind of acceptance and that kind of love and lust, he thinks this body that I'm desperately trying to improve is pretty damn hot. The more you start to believe it, because we believe what we hear most. And if all we're hearing is either in our head, the things we say really awful about, the awful things we say about ourselves, or we are surrounded by people who say awful things, toxic family members, toxic quote friends, let's not call air quotes, y'all, friends, old lovers, bad dominance, you know, whatever it is, whoever those voices are in our head or that we're actually physically hearing, the less we hear of those and the more we hear of the positive things, the easier it is to believe it. And the easier it is to go, wait a moment, I want that feeling, not this shitty feeling that this other person gives me. And so you start kind of trying to seek that stuff out. None of it happens overnight. None of it is, you know, you go to bed one night feeling awful and you wake up the next morning feeling perfect. It is a long process and you will falter. I mean, there are times I know I'm losing weight over the past several weeks of this eating thing I'm doing to try and find my food sensitivities and all this yucky stuff I have to deal with. I've not had chocolate in like 2 months, y'all. I'm just saying, no chocolate. It's awful. Anyway, I know my body is slimming down and tightening up and I'm building muscle, muscle I've never had before. And I know that I am tighter and firmer than I've ever been. And yet I'll look in my mirror and I see this dumpy, wumpy, overweight woman. And I'm like, oh God, I hate this, right? I'm not dumb enough to tell him because I'd get in trouble because I'm not allowed to talk bad about people that daddy loves. But I might say something of, you know, I just wish I saw more improvement or I wish it was different. And he looks at me and goes, I don't know who you're looking at because I think you're sexy as hell and I think you're beautiful and I think you're wonderful. And even when I don't believe it when I say it, I believe it when he says it. And that's the kind of thing I think you can find if you find a good DS relationship. Sometimes your partner will help you glue your broken pieces back together. Should that be their job? Should you go out seeking a relationship for that purpose? Absolutely not. That is pretty much the quickest way to guarantee you have a very unhealthy relationship or a really toxic one, or you find the user and abuser and the one who wants to keep you feeling powerless or ugly or whatever, because then they feel better about themselves, okay? No, I don't think we should seek out relationships to fix who we are. But I think that we are still worthy of good relationships, regardless of how we perceive ourselves to be broken, okay? Because sometimes it's all about how we see ourselves and the rest of the world doesn't see it, doesn't even agree with it. So I told you earlier, I'd kind of sort of start figuring out some of my mental gunk. As of this show, I've now had 3 appointments with my therapist. I really like him. When I say kink friendly, I have no clue, you know, which side of the slash he's on, if he even identifies with it. But I know he understands BDSM and DS. Why? Because in one of my appointments, I said, well, last week I had a total baby girl temper tantrum. And he chuckled and said, did you get a spanking after that? I said, no, not that I was having the temper tantrum, to get the spanking. And I think he equates that when you have the acting out bad behavior, you know, some people are doing that to get their spanking. Well, I have a relationship where I go, hey, daddy, can I have a spanking? I really need one. And I will usually get it. But I can tell him that I had a baby girl moment and he doesn't even blink. So that's kind of nice. So over the past few visits I've had with him, we've figured out some stuff. First of all, in the first visit, he said, well, you are a little bit OCD, you're a little manic, you're a little depressed, and you have a little anxiety. And I translated that in my head to mean you, my dear, are a hot fucking mess. I'm a little bit of everything, and so I'm a mystery, and I'm a puzzle, and I wasn't really surprised, but I was a little disappointed. I kind of wanted to go in and he would go, oh, you're classic, you know, generalized anxiety. You're classic bipolar. You're whatever. I kind of wanted a clear cut answer. Well, that's not how my life works. Nothing is ever clear cut. So the next visit we're talking about, you know, where anxieties sometimes come from and how our emotions are sort of processed and all kinds of like really interesting stuff. I went to college many, many years ago and I was a psychology major and I found it fascinating. And so part of these visits are just fascinating to me. And I said something about how my anxiety stems from thinking about my future professional goals, which is very true. You don't even want to know what kind of mental meltdown I had when I declared to John Brownstone, I want to go to Eroticon, because that was not only making a firm pledge, this is what I want to do, it was planning for my professional future, and I'm freaking out about that kind of stuff. So we're talking about some of the anxieties I've been feeling and where they're coming from, and he just looked at me and went, you are so repressed. And I thought, thank you, I think. So I got gunk to work on, right? I don't have a clear-cut diagnosis. I don't have clear-cut answers. I don't have clear-cut reasons, but it's worth it to me because I don't like who I become when I let my anxiety take over. And I certainly don't like how I act when my OCD takes over. Now, my OCD is not the type that I can't even leave the house. Like, I keep coming back to check a lock or to check the oven or whatever. I am convinced, for whatever reason, that I'm going to lock myself out of the house when I don't want to, or that I'm going to leave my phone somewhere. And I don't know why. I don't know why those two things. Those are my two things. So the reason for the door lock, I'll give you a little insight into me. When I walk the dog, and I walk the dog 2 to 3 times a day, I don't usually have pockets. I'm wearing yoga pants, y'all. I'm not wearing a bra most of the time. And I don't want to hold the leash and my phone, if I'm even carrying it, and the keys. So I leave the door unlocked. Well, somewhere along the line, I got into my head that I might lock myself out. And since I don't always carry my phone, or even when I do, I'm not paying $80 for a locksmith to let me in my house. I'd have to get a hold of John Brownstone and pull him from work and wait, and we'd be in the hot sun, and right? So I now have this thing where I have to jiggle the door handle multiple times before I can leave my house to walk the dog. And it's very annoying. And I still sometimes am convinced that I've locked myself out. I mean, I hold my breath every time I go to open my own door. I'm convinced I've locked myself out of the house. Have I ever locked myself out of the house? No, I have not. It does not change the fact that I'm worried about it. When we go out, I'm addicted to my phone. I am that typical person who's almost always got her phone in her hand. I'm checking email. I'm checking social media. You know, it's partly because I run two separate careers, vanilla and kink, and somebody is always sort of trying to get a hold of me. But when we're out and about, I have my phone out at some point. Even when I try and make an effort to go, okay, we're having dinner, put the phone away, at some point the phone comes out. Well, the moment it comes out of my purse, or it needs to go into my purse if I'm leaving the house, I'm convinced I've forgotten it. I check my purse multiple times. I get into the car, I check my purse 2 or 3 times. I pull my phone out to sit next to me so I can look over at it and see that it's there. We go to a restaurant, I make sure my phone is in my purse. We leave the restaurant, I always turn and look behind me to see if I've left anything. I have 2 kids though, so you know, it's conceivable something can get left behind. And then as we're walking out of the restaurant, I'm checking my purse for my phone. We get into the vehicle, I'm checking my purse for my phone. Even John Brownstone went, what in the hell? I don't know where it comes from. So, you know, I was like, okay, that's my OCD. Well, my anxieties, okay, that's the fear and the manic part, the, you know, the being bipolar, where there's the manic part and the depressed part, that has always been a part of my personality, but it's never been the kind of thing that stops me, that makes me stop moving forward, that makes me just shut down. Well, now it is. And I tell you all of that, one, to kind of give you an update, because I've been talking about my mental gunk for a couple months, and anybody who's listened to older shows has heard the up and down in my voice, you know, when it's a bad day versus a good day, whatever. But I have these issues, and they can, and sometimes do, affect my ability to be what I would consider a good submissive. And yet, I'm not being kicked out, I'm not being told that I can't be John Brownstone's submissive anymore. I am just as worthy of the love he has for me as I was before, when I was relatively normal. We're all a little crazy, so I hesitate to use the word normal, but you know what I mean. When I was more myself, what I feel like myself to be. So I have these issues I have to work through. Now, I'll be the first to admit, I'm really glad I don't have to go through all this and be single and be out there thinking I would really like a dominant partner, but ooh, my anxieties, I cannot imagine. What I can imagine is that the person that I would want would be the person who earned my trust so that I would confess some of that. As somebody with trust issues, I can't imagine telling a total stranger that I'm trying to get to fuck me and love me, hey, guess what? Here's the mental basket case you've been handed. I'm a little OCD. I'm a little manic. I'm a little depressed. I'm a little anxious. You know, that's probably not how you start the conversation on the first date. But I would want the person that over time I could feel comfortable opening up to like that. And that person is going to be rare and special. But you know what? They're out there. And how do you know that maybe you've got somebody like that? When they don't run scared, when you tell them something about yourself, when you confess, you know, I need to be cuddled at night until I fall asleep, okay? I didn't know I needed that till he started doing that, by the way, and now I don't fall asleep well unless we're doing that whole cuddling thing. But whatever your thing to confess is, you know, they'll figure out pretty quickly if you've got low self-esteem, and that fear of being alone is usually more obvious than you realize, just so you know. But, you know, you want the person who will say, okay, I see these parts of you that you think are awful or that you're trying to work on or that can make dealing with each other in a relationship more difficult, and I accept them. And I say, that's who you are, and I like you for you, and I love you for you. And if you want to work on this, I will work on it with you. And if, you know, you don't, but you want to learn how to live with it, I will learn how to live with it with you, okay? Our issues can send us out there into the world and allow us to accept the shittiest human being that comes across our path, right? That happens. When you find yourself dating or fucking or submitting or dominating or whatever, the same type of person over and over and over again, and they're never who you want, and they either always leave you and break your heart and make you feel awful and make your whatever your issue is that much worse because they're the fifth person or the 10th person or the 20th person to do that to you, you know, or you have to withdraw from them and get the hell away from them because you've at least recognized that that's not good for you and you're still heartbroken because you thought maybe this time it was going to be better. What I'm going to tell you, after you do it the first like two times and you have the same type of person, I'm going to tell you that you need to look within yourself. Because is it your fear of being alone and that's your issue and you're picking the first person who winks at you? Well, that's a problem, okay? Is it your low self-esteem and you're taking the first person who says something nice about you, but then when they turn on you and say something shitty to you, you believe it because you already believe that about yourself? You know, are you not worrying about, you don't think you can trust anybody, so you'll take anybody who looks your way, or you'll take nobody and then, you know, freak out that you're alone. Whatever it is, I want you to look. My advice, my philosophy, and it is just me, y'all. I'm not an expert and I don't have all the answers. But what I would say is you need to look within yourself, because here's the thing. What's that? The definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again, expecting different results. If you keep finding yourself with the same type of partner every single time, and that type of partner is a shitty one, it's not just them. Yeah, they're shitty people, but what is it that you're doing? What is it that you're allowing to happen? What is it that you're not doing, right? I mean, sometimes I wish people who have no trust issues at all would get a couple of trust issues, you know? Stop trusting everybody who looks at you cross-eyed because they're not all worthy of your trust. However, those of us with trust issues, there comes a point you have to take a leap of faith and you have to recognize that you might still get hurt, but you took that leap anyway. You jumped without a parachute and you said, okay, this person seems good. I've, you know, questioned them ad nauseum. I have, you know, done a background check. I've Googled them. I've stalked them online. Okay, they seem to be who they say they are. Let's leap into the great unknown. I mean, there's got to be sort of a balance, you know, and if you want, you can have the healthy relationship. And here's the thing. If you listen to shows like this one and you read blogs with other healthy kinky couples, that tells me right there that you are interested in trying to figure out how to have your own version of that. You know, I get people who say all the time, I want what you and John Brownstone have. Well, you can't have what me and John Brownstone have, because that's me and John Brownstone and our personalities and our connection and our energy and our vibe. But you can have your own version of it, whatever it may look like. Don't try to mimic what we have, because it'll never work. You're not me and he's not your partner. However, if you are watching and following and listening to people who, you know, I'd like to think we have a good, healthy relationship. Thank you very much. And you're trying to figure out what that means in terms of kink or not, okay? There's a lot that we can learn from vanillas, and there's a lot that vanillas can learn from us, okay? Because it's a people thing. And y'all know me, I talk about that. We talk about flavor all the time and how, you know, our kinky relationship is so special. But at the end of the day, it's people coming together to form a bond. Flavor is irrelevant, right? So if you are seeking out what you feel healthy relationships look like and can be like, then I think you're already, you know, on your way there to figuring out your own healthy relationship. And I don't think you have to wait until you're completely, quote, fixed or perfect or issue free. Because guess what? None of us are ever issue free. I made John Brownstone work for 6 months to deal with my trust issues. 6 months, y'all. Okay. Before I said, yes, you're mine. And for me, because of my trust issues, once somebody, you know, I've said, okay, you're my person, you're my other half, you're the one I want in my inner circle, I'm loyal to the end, which is how my ex-husband got away with so much shit for so long, because I am, and I don't always see problems, but I've learned from that relationship, and I learned from everything I experienced before I met John Brownstone, and so I know that it's not enough to just trust him completely and to be completely loyal. We have to work on it, and we have to talk about the hard things, and we have to do the hard things together to keep our relationship going. But when we met, there were my trust issues. There was my fear that of being abandoned, that, you know, I could never actually have a long-term healthy relationship. People always left. Whether they left physically by dumping me or just ghosting me or whatever they did, or like my ex-husband did, he dropped out of the relationship like in the first 6 months, and I thought that was normal. And I did, you know, eventually I dropped out too, but we were still two people there together. And I thought, oh, well, that's enough, until I realized it's not. So I had this fear of abandonment, and I had awful, awful, horrible self-esteem. I thought I was the ugliest, fattest, dumpiest woman alive. And how could anybody want to see me naked, let alone kneel at their feet, let alone take a crop or a flogger or a paddle to my ass and make it red? I did not think I could have those things. I truly did not believe myself worthy. And he saw something in me and said, I'm willing to work through the trust issues. Man, y'all, if you are the type with trust issues, that person is worth their weight in gold if they'll work through them. I'm just telling you. So he says, okay, I'll work through the trust issues. I'll earn her trust. I'll prove to her I'm the person I say I am. I'm interested enough to do that. Y'all, and don't get mad at the person who's not interested enough to do that. That is your early warning sign that y'all weren't a good fit. I know you want to believe that you were because you felt something and you saw something in that person. You want the person who will work hard for your affection, just like you should work hard for theirs. It is a two-way street. But don't be that mad at the person who bails at the first sign that you've got trust issues and they don't want to work that hard. That helps you sort of weed through the chaff a little bit quicker, okay? And gives you time to be there for the one. The one who's willing to work hard on it will come as a wonderful surprise. You won't believe it at first and you won't trust it at first, but they will. So, you know, he worked through that, and then he said, you know what? I'm going to make sure you know you're beautiful, and I'm going to make sure you know that I will never leave you, and I'm here for you, and I mean what I say, and, you know, all of those things. He was willing to work through them with me. And you know what's funny? Because, you know, we always talk about self-esteem of a submissive and the problems of a submissive, and because, you know, the dominants are sort of put on this pedestal that they're supposed to have no problems and have no issues, and they're in charge and in control all the time. And I probably didn't see his self-esteem and his concern issues till probably what, by the time we moved in, because that's when I could see him every day. And, you know, I saw him at his best and his worst at that point. And he's got his own, nothing major, nothing that, you know, he's like, I got to call a therapist for, but everybody's got their thing, right? And his, you know, we talk about bad tapes, you know, the memories and the situations you've experienced before play in your head sometimes like a bad tape. And when you find yourself in something that feels similar, you expect it to happen the way it happened with the person before, right? So sometimes he'll start acting as if I'm going to act like his ex-wife, and I just give him a look, and I don't sound very baby girl or submissive, but I tell him to knock that off. But I know that's one of his issues. He had such a bad time of it for such a long time that sometimes he expects that. So it's my job and my pleasure to prove that I'm nothing like that. And I, you know, what I said I would do, I would do. And the person I am is who I always am, good and bad, you know, even when times are stressful and when they're not. So I don't know that I've actually made one solid point other than the fact that I don't care what your issue is, as long as you recognize what it is, fear of being alone, a mental, you know, depression, anxiety, trust issues. Those trust issues, if they're like as serious as mine are, could be avoidant personality. I'm not a therapist. I'm not diagnosed in no damn body. But, you know, he was reading this definition, and if I can find that definition online somewhere, I may reproduce it in a blog post or whatever. And I said, he read what avoidant personality means, you know, about not trusting people and keeping them at arm's length and not wanting to enter into relationships, platonic, romantic, doesn't matter, you know, with other human beings. You know, you avoid interaction and you avoid those relationships and you avoid that kind of thing. And I just looked at him and said, is my picture next to that definition? Because, yeah, that's me, you know. So I know I'm not alone. There are other people like that. But if you can recognize those things about yourself and take a little time to kind of think and get introspective and get in your own head for a bit and think about how some of those issues might be affecting how you choose and accept partners or how you avoid the hell out of people and then, you know, complain that you're lonely and you wish you had your own partner. Hello. You can very slowly start to change the way you do that and very slowly start attracting different types of people to you. Okay. You know, part of it's the energy we put out and the vibe we put out in the world. And part of it is how we allow people to treat us. And if you are the type who will take anybody who looks at you cross-eyed because you're afraid to be alone, you're going to have to learn how to go, oh, hell no, you are not worth it. Get the hell away from me. That's dom, sub, in between, doesn't matter, switch, whoever you are, vanilla kink, doesn't matter, okay? We kind of all, if we're single and we're looking for somebody and we want to be in a relationship and we want to find that one or that multiple ones, you know, everybody's got their thing. Sometimes you got to get a little bit more selective, okay? And you got to be willing to go, ooh, you're crap, get the hell away, you know? And if you're at the opposite end where you keep everybody at arm's length until they, quote, prove themselves to you, first of all, be grateful for the people who don't want to work that hard because that's less you have to deal with. And the fact of the matter is not everybody does. And then when you come across that person who goes, oh no, you're a challenge and I'm intrigued by you and I want to know more, and they're willing to put in the hard work. Some people like a challenge, but they don't like the work. And some people love the challenge and they want to know, they want to get closer to you. You've intrigued them enough that, oh, now I'm really interested. On your end, I'm going to need you to take a leap of faith. Okay. For me, I have about a million tests I put somebody through when I want to learn if I can trust them. And they're not like handwritten tests. Oh, you know, A through D, multiple choice, true, false. I just, in my head, I'm watching and I'm thinking and I'm waiting to see, you know, how they react to certain things. There comes a point after you do that, you just got to take a leap of faith because you don't know who you'll find and what you'll allow into your life until you do. So I guess maybe that's my point, is that whatever your issues are, you know, severe or not, you're not relegated to being alone forever. You don't have to be completely perfect and fix yourself in every aspect before you find happiness and love and kink. You don't have to be a perfect size 2. You don't have to lose a million pounds. You don't have to be a certain color. You know, I'm an eternal optimist. So I think that for the people who want loving DS relationships, there is somebody out there for you. Okay. But it's hard. And it takes work, and they need to be worthy of you just like you need to be worthy of them. And if you keep finding crappy people who are totally not worthy of you, you might need to change how you're handling that and your mindset and the vibe you're putting out and whatever else. Or just start, you know, figuring out how to tell them, no, you need to go now. No, I'm not interested in you. Okay. So there's no one answer. There's no perfect answer. I don't have all the answers. I guess I want to let you know, if you're alone and you're terrified of being alone forever, that it doesn't have to be that way. Okay. There's no one right answer for what will work for you versus what worked for me versus what works for the next person. But I think the willingness to try and the willingness to take a good long look at yourself and to become more selective and to have those leaps of faith and sometimes be more assertive or whatever you may need. That's the little things we do that can make a huge difference in the outcome. And so I want everybody who wants a kinky DS relationship, good one, to have one. But I don't want you to think that you're going to have exactly what John Brownston and I have, if that's even what you want, but you can have your own version of it. It won't happen as fast as you want it to. God knows it never does, y'all. I've never gotten anything as quickly as I wanted to. But I have the things I've had to work really hard to have because they took time and they took effort and I had to grow as a person. I had to admit some things about myself. I had to learn some things. Those things that I had to go through all that to get, they were always worth it in the end. Even if they weren't forever, if they were just for right now, but I changed a little bit and I became a little bit better and I became a little bit stronger and I became a little bit more of the person I wanted to be by going through that experience, it was always worth it. So I guess that's kind of just what I wanted to tell y'all this week while my personal issues are on my mind. So that's the message for this week. I'm starting to do this more and more often because a lot of y'all love FetLife. So if you want to talk about this or you want to give me more show ideas or you just want to say hi, we are on FetLife. John Brownstone is Southern Sir. I'm Kayla Lords. Oh, for all of those of you who emailed or left a comment or messaged us on FetLife to give us ideas and stuff, thank you, thank you. I have to compile them onto a list so we can figure out when and how we want to talk about it. Most of them are topics I want to talk about with John Brownstone with me because I think it's good to get both our perspectives. I can kind of see a dominant side of things, but I'm not a dominant, so it's my perspective is the submissive perspective for the most part. And I like to get his perspective on some of those stuff. There's some great topics about why privacy is really important in BDSM, some of the ramifications if you get outed that are bad, and the reason most of us keep our kink very private, safe words, and some other stuff about relationships and all kinds of good stuff. So feel free. We love that kind of stuff. You actually help us. You know, when you have a question and you want to know more about a topic, that kind of tells us which direction to head into, because I promise you, you're not the only one with that question on your mind. Just a reminder, the links for Patreon and my books and PayPal and all that good stuff, they will be in the show notes if you're interested. If you're not, no worries. Just sharing this podcast with your other kinky friends is a help. Sharing my books online is a help. Leaving a review, all of it helps. Every little bit comes together to make a difference. So that's it for me this week. I don't know if John Brownstone will be with me next week, but I kind of hope so. He's got some days off. So if we can get some kid-free time, we might sneak in a recording or two, and that way you can hear us together again, which makes me very happy. Anyway, that's it for me. Keep it kinky, y'all, and we'll see you next week.